Thanks for listening to season 4 of the Utah Real Estate Podcast.
The most downloaded series in the whole state and possibly the world.
Hello, I'm Steph Scholl here with the one and only Silver Dollar Man.
Also known as Scott Stevenson. This year, we are consulting with community leaders about the future of the Beehive State.
And how you can best secure a house for your home.
Join the thousands.
And my mom.
That subscribe every Thursday for the most exciting hour of the week.
Scott.
Yes, Stephanie.
We have the Deputy Director of the Utah Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity here with us.
Ben Hart.
So Ben, tell us, how long have you been working in the governor's office?
So I've been with the office for 7 years. Okay. I've been deputy for just five years now.
So is your background in economics then? Or?
Yeah, I did a degree in economics and then a master's degree in economics. I did a separate bachelor's in political science. But I think as a career, it's just been very interesting. I mean, people don't realize that there are people in government who spend all their time worrying about the economy and where the economy is going. But that's absolutely what we do. And so I've been in this line of work for 15, 16, 17 years now, awesome. However long it's been. And it's been a lot of fun.
Anybody talks about finance and says it's a lot of fun. must be somebody who enjoys that and also somebody who's actually having a success in that. There's nothing fun about economics when it's in the tank, right?
No.
When things are doing well, as Utah seems to be, then it's always fun, right?
Yeah. Well, we get a chance to talk a lot about Utah's successes. And, you know, over the past decade or so, it's really been, we're one of the best in the country. I think we now can honestly stake our claim as to one of the best economies in the world. And I think the pandemic has really slowed down some Asian economies, but it's really given us the chance to, I think, reemerge not only globally, but also invent some industries we didn't realize we had in the state. Things like advanced manufacturing that's starting to emerge more and more.
Explain what advanced manufacturing is.
So very good question. So I think we're all, in our minds, when we think manufacturing, we think the 3Ds, dark, dirty, dangerous, right?
Yeah, right.
Advanced manufacturing is a whole nother level of manufacturing now. I mean, we're talking about not only advanced machineries, machines that do things that I didn't even know you could do, very, very automated, ensuring that if you're operating this equipment, it's not just touch anymore. It's really, you've got to have advanced certificates to know, like CNC machines, how to even operate these machines. So even working in advanced manufacturing is a very different career than what it was 20 and 30 years ago. But you can't just get the stuff you need from China and from other Asian markets anymore. So we have to either reinvent these things locally or look for new global partners. And so it's a fascinating time economically.
So what would be a hands-on example of that kind of industry here in Utah?
Aerospace and defense absolutely is one. Biotech, developing new advanced manufacturing products related to, you know, whether it's the heart, whether it's the lungs, whatever it is, all these things that you can't just, you know, put together and assemble the way we have before, but they take it not only from a standpoint of developing them, but also mass, just how many you've got to produce. You've got to be thinking more automated, how you get your product made, but also out to the world globally as well. So it's a very different game than what it was 20 and 30 years ago.
And so before I interrupted you, we were talking about all the different areas. So this is one of them. What's another?
Advanced manufacturing, life sciences is definitely one that's growing here in the state of Utah. Aerospace and defense, particularly up around Hill Air Force Base, has just been growing leaps and bounds over the last 2 and 3 years. There's a major project that's come up in there around the ground-based strategic deterrent. And Northrop Grumman has established a major presence and a lot of their supply chain has come in with them. And so you see housing prices that are affected by that. There's a lot that's affected by that. Even within financial services and tech, and I think a lot of people say, well, tech's not really expanding. You know, the model's changing in terms of who's working at home and so on and so forth. But what we talk about in Utah is some of the sub-clusters within tech. So things like financial tech, fintech, even things like Roots Tech and some of our great Roots Tech company here in the state of Utah, certainly defense tech, health tech, all these different little clusters that are out there that you never even thought would have a global presence. But because of technology, everyone's finding new niches and new companies to start. So it's really pretty incredible.
And is Roots Tech like the genealogy?
Yeah, I mean, you think about Roots Tech, what it means here.
Yep. And
I was thinking that or Farm Inc. So.
But AgTech even. I mean, down in Mona, we've got this, you know, kind of one of these best practices in terms of agriculture, even for what it is. And so you're seeing all these new industries, and we want to be at the forefront. We want to be where economic evolution is happening. Because if you're not where it's happening, then you're being left behind.
You don't know this, Stephanie's heard me say this a million times, but, you know, I'm East Coast, born, raised in the East Coast. One of the things I've seen out here in Utah since I moved out here several years ago was the amount of wealth. Mm. I mean, it's been stunning to me to watch so many young families and how much money is here that comes, I'm assuming, from the tech, but from all kinds of avenues.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the wealth that we've seen generated over the last several years, definitely tech has had their share. No questions about that. I mean, I think those who have the right skill set, and skill set really is the currency in this new economy. The ability to do things, particularly in tech, is really, really important, which comes back to education, our workforce system, getting kids ready. But yeah, there's a lot of wealth that's being created. And I think a lot of people say, well, it's these Californians that are coming in and buying up properties. Not so much. I mean, it's a lot of people who are coming into the wealth factor that are able to drive up housing, buying second homes, whatever it right. may be, that I think really is putting the pinch on the Utah housing market.
Well, and that's what we just learned in our last episode, that 2/3 of the growth is internal, which was just fascinating to me.
Yeah, because most people think it's because everybody's moving in here, but it's really internally based, meaning the children that are growing up, the big families.
And I have a question for you, because it seems like Utah, there's a ton of bloggers and influencers. Would that be a demographic or not really?
Well, it's interesting because you see these things that are kind of a symptom of something deeper. Uh-huh. And you see the blogging activity. Yeah. I mean, you see even sales and different types of sales that happen here in the state of Utah. Those are actually part of what can be a very deeper economy that are very important. And so we talk about, you know, the different types of sales that happen, international sales, you know, even oils and different things like that. But the reality is those employers employ a lot of people and they create a lot of wealth. And so so you get into bloggers and things like that. And obviously those are revenue sources. Mm-hmm. Utah has always been famous for those who are non-primary wage earners to find innovative ways to make money, quite frankly. And so, we typically in the state of Utah will have one kind of breadwinner, but then in the second for non-primary wage earners in a family, they're able to kind of look out and see what they want to do perhaps to make money. And sometimes maybe that means blogging if you can find a way to have a revenue source. Maybe that's just the way to keep someone engaged. But sometimes it may be, you know, oil sales. It may be a lot of different things. But that's one of the things that's really helped us in the state of Utah. But I think that's helped a lot of Utah families as well. Even call centers and different things like that. Because, you know, you look at flexible scheduling, work at home options, different things like that. I think that's allowed people to bring in other income and revenues. And it's been something that's kind of a little bit unique to Utah.
And there's kind of an entrepreneur spirit here in Utah, isn't there? I mean, there's a history of it. And it just seems like everybody's got something.
Yeah.
It seems like everybody's got something. You know, if you talk to somebody and say, what do you do? They may be at home watching the kids, but they've got another business that's going on there.
Yeah.
And they're pumping out some sales.
Yeah. And I'm amazed, you know, at some of the ideas and some of the concepts that people use to make money. And that entrepreneurship kind of spirit that we have here in the state of Utah. Like, it's so important for our economy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of areas that don't have this. And I think people who are thinking more along the lines of small business, entrepreneurship, we've got a lot of just single person entities here in the state of Utah, meaning that you're just a work from home kind of a person, but you're bringing in a revenue. And that really is important to our economy. I think it's allowed us when the nationwide economy has really tanked, it's allowed us to kind of stay afloat through multiple revenue sources for households. And so, yeah, we are definitely a very entrepreneurship. And even beyond that, I mean, the number of people who are willing to start their own business, every day I hear two or three different businesses that start up and I'm just like, I never thought someone would be able to turn that into a business.
But I mean, how many cookie stores can you come up with?
I mean,
and they're thriving.
Yeah.
I mean, who would believe? I mean, I never believed when I was a kid. Look, I had an Oreo cookie. Now I'm driving up. I'm driving up, and I could buy five sleeves of Oreos, and I get one cookie. You know,
didn't you know that cookies and soda are the new like Jello for Utah?
Yeah. it's pretty incredible. But I mean, it's just amazing the thought process that people have, that they make ideas work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I think has been really, really important to us. And I, again, that ability to make things work, though. And I think you're seeing venture capital. I mean, even institutional lending. So the ability to find funding to start that idea and to create something and some business inertia. But you have that ability to do that better here in the state of Utah than almost anywhere else. And I think, again, that's something that's really important for who we are and how we define ourselves.
I'm realizing as we are talking to more and more people this season, just how much behind the scenes work goes into things. And so what are some of the things that maybe Utahans don't know about, but are the behind the scenes stuff that's going on in the Utah Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity?
Well, isn't it fascinating? I mean, if you drive down I-15, you get a sense that Utah's doing really well because you can see Adobe, you can see Northrop Grumman, you can see Goldman Sachs, you can see a lot of these great companies. But behind each of those stories is really a lot of important work and thought that goes into why they chose to locate here. And our role is not to make decisions for the private sector. So all the success, it is owed to the private sector. But what we do behind the scenes in terms of trying to make that happen, there's a lot. And so one, it's just a strategy. And this is really something Governor Cox really, really grab onto and take hold of, is instead of just incentivizing every business out there, let's incentivize the ones that really have that ripple effect through the economy. So if you get an Adobe here, then you create a lot of new home buyers. And if you create a lot of new home buyers, you create a lot of construction jobs and on down the line, that multiplier effect. And so we're very, very targeted in terms of trying to bring these right businesses either in, but now really more than ever, also helping these homegrown businesses, as we're talking about, to expand. And as they create more jobs, they create higher wages, then we see that multiplier effect that really starts to spread and ripple throughout the community. And so for us, it's very important that we get these companies right. And now more than ever, I think we're also putting more thought into how do we grow and growing the right way, making sure that communities have good transportation options, making sure education, workforce, there are good options available to parents for their kids, making sure that we're creating the right type of growth that's going to allow them to keep people to keep their kids and grandkids in the state, because that's important to Utahns. And so I think we're being much more thoughtful about it, but there's been decades of work now. And I think under Governor Leavitt, you saw a lot of planning. Under Governor Huntsman, you saw a lot of work on marketing the state, bringing in new business. And now Governor Cox, we're seeing it turn yet another corner in terms of our economic philosophy for the state. And it's going to yield its own results. But what we don't want is not to, you know, put a bullseye on California, but now a lot of that work, a lot of behind the scenes is being done in terms of how do we make sure we're growing in the right way and not just growing for growth's sake.
We've had a number of podcasts now that have been dealing with the economic situation in Utah, but I've been so impressed with I don't really know how to say this. I don't want to be political in any way, but it just seems like everybody seems to be a little bit on the same page in Utah. It doesn't seem like there's so much in-house fighting like you see sometimes in some of these states where everybody's fighting and it almost seems like they're tearing the state apart for political reasons. Here in Utah, what I see is a continuity of ideas that people, as you've stated, building blocks upon building blocks, which are all helping the whole state of Utah. Yeah. I find that to be really refreshing.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting. We'll work with stakeholders or whatever it may be that work out of state, work with other governments. And when they come into Utah, one of the things that people get frustrated with is that we have a consensus process here, meaning that to the best that we can, it's not always perfect, but in other states, they have the ability to just railroad the other party or the other group or whatever it may be. I think people sometimes will get frustrated with the fact that Utah wants to bring everyone to the table. We want to have very thorough conversations, and we want to come up with the best answer and the best solution. And it's something that I think we really take for granted in the state of Utah. I always joke that we're big enough that we can still get things done, but we're small enough that we still like each other. Mm-hmm. And it's very true in a lot of ways, because I think I'm able to call the commissioner for higher education. He's awesome. And we work together. You wouldn't see that happen in a lot of states. We're able to call the director of the, you know, the Utah Department of Transportation, Carlos. I mean, he's amazing. And so, you know, we work with these people a lot. That's very, very unique. Typically, when you get outside the state of Utah, you see a lot of silos.
Right.
And that's not productive. So I think we've tried to do away with silos here in the state.
Well, in that way, I think Utah is a shining example for every other state of how you run a state efficiently and for the people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what we really try and do is I think everyone has in mind what's best for the state of Utah. And every once in a while, you'll see special interests that'll get hold on any specific or given topic. But really, I think it's how do we do what's best for Utah now and in the future as well. And I think that uniting vision helps.
So I want to know, what is the question that you get asked most often by people?
Why are you still giving out incentives? We get that question all the time. It's why are you still trying to attract or help our companies grow in the state of Utah? Mm-hmm. And of course, the answer to that is very obvious. It's we want to keep your kids and your grandkids here. And I think there's a lot of people who are just saying, look, let's push all the growth out to the very ends of the Wasatch Front or where we don't have a lot of people now. Like, let's start growing those areas. Unfortunately, it's not that easy. Business wants to be right in the heart of a very robust workforce market so that they can attract the skilled labor that they need. And so you get what we get at the point of the mountain where everyone wants to be in one location. But at the same time, when we're graduating 25,000 or 30,000 new people into the labor force every year, we don't have the luxury of having poor jobs. Honestly, Utah's been in that place in generations past, and we lose a lot of our kids to out-of-state opportunities. If we don't keep creating those jobs here in the state of Utah, we're going to lose our kids. Now, we are being more targeted, but we still are trying to get businesses to expand here for that reason.
Do you see that continuing on?
Yeah, I think you've always got to be aggressive trying to bring new businesses to the state, but also growing your existing businesses as well. And here's the reality. If the state ever stops doing that, then we're going to be in the place where Michigan is right now, Detroit. I mean, mm-hmm. where the industry to a certain degree has left them behind. And you're still seeing houses, you know, in the city that are going for almost nothing because there's no economic inertia.
Yeah.
And so, no, we don't have a choice. With all the people we have coming into our market, our labor force every year, we have to continue growing. And that's the reality with economic inertia. You're either at the forefront or you're going to be left behind.
Well, and I found it really fascinating because I went to your guys' website and you guys have so many programs that you're doing. Like, I didn't realize, like, you have this program for film and then you have like rural stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these?
Yeah. In fact, we're making one of those pivots towards rural Utah. So more and more, how do we help rural businesses mm-hmm. to expand? They say their biggest export in rural Utah is their kids. I mean, exporting their kids outside of those areas. And it's true. It's very unfortunate. And so, hence that, I'm not joking when I say that. It's one of the unfortunate realities. So if we can help those companies expand, so we have a number of different rural programs to help. We also have other programs related to small business innovation. We do kind of have our flagship incentive, which is really meant to help bigger businesses expand in the state. And so we've got a lot of programs that people probably don't know about. One of our efforts now, more than anything else, is how do we make sure we get over the awareness gap and help people understand what's available?
I mean, the film one was fascinating to me. I didn't realize so many like people come and film here in Utah.
Yeah. Well, no one's going to beat Georgia. Georgia is like
really?
They do more incentives than anybody. So if you look at all the Marvel movies and almost all big budget movies, they're going to have right at the very end of the credits, the thank you to the Georgia Office of Economic Development.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You say that. Is this Georgia Peach they always have?
Georgia Peach. Yeah. So ours is very fiscally sound and very responsible, but we do have one. And really, it does subsidize the industry here. Uh-huh. Without an incentive in the film industry, they're going to Georgia or Canada or other places that are going to offer it. Because unfortunately, there's not a lot of margin for money.
So where do people usually film in Utah?
All over the place. And in fact, a lot of times filming locations are used that you would never think about. And this last legislative session, they gave us a little bit of an enhanced ability to do more filming in rural Utah. Kevin Costner made a very big play to up our ante as a state and see if we can't do more to attract film development mm-hmm. to rural locations. And so that's one of the more kind of enhanced incentives that we mm-hmm. have. But Utah has a really rich legacy in terms of film and production in the state. And so our hope is that incentive continues to draw those productions here.
See, I think that's so cool. And talking about with the small businesses, how you said there's mm-hmm. a lot of people that are like, a one-man show, one-woman show. So you have programs to help them grow their business?
As opposed to actual grants, what we do is a lot of times we help with technical expertise, make sure they can develop out a good marketing plan, a good business plan, plug them into any of the lending sources that we work with where, you know, can be helpful. And so it's really helping them get their business, give them the resources to help their get their businesses off the ground. And so we work with the business resource centers across the state. Sometimes that's plugged in with the university, sometimes a tech college, but there's a lot of resources with, particularly with the small business development centers to help those that want to start or those who have newly started businesses.
And what are some other, I mean, because there, like the website, Scott, has so many things, so I can't remember, but what are some other things that you guys do?
So we're involved in a lot of different things. Even during the pandemic, our office played a pretty major pivot, and a lot of the small business and other types of grants that you saw go out, we helped get, I think, 200 million plus out to, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 businesses across the state. Yeah. And so we did do a lot of grant programs. We continue to do more grant programs. We also help with international development. So making sure that we continue to be successful on the larger global stage. Mm-hmm. And that's really important, particularly as we're coming out of a pandemic, is how do we re-engage and help people develop mm-hmm. supply chain partners and things like that. And so basically anything to do with the economy, we've got something that probably helps to some degree or another.
Or does the general public, do you think, are they aware of that, or do they reach out, or do you think that sometimes people start these businesses and they just don't know that they've got a lifeline?
We try and do as much as we can to help, and there is an awareness gap. Not every business in the state knows about our services, of course, so we try and do outreach more and more, but it's tough to do outreach. A lot of times it's easy to get programs set up, but to do outreach and marketing, it's like, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to find money for those types of things. And so we're doing more to try and synergize all our programs and just make people aware generally that we're there. But, you know, does the average public citizen know? Probably not.
Yeah.
And as long as we find people have good jobs and, you know, we don't need to be on front of mind for everybody. We just want to make sure those who need to know us, businesses know about us.
If an individual was thinking about starting up a business, where would be the best place for them to reach out to?
For our programs, business.utah.gov. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can learn about local small business resources.
Yeah.
We also offer government contracting services. So if you want to do business with the government, which is huge in the state, also international exporting, if you want to develop international markets. So business.utah.gov is our one-stop
shop. Fabulous. Yeah. Fabulous.
Sometimes there's this mentality of, I can do it myself.
Yeah.
I don't need help. Like you were talking about that
right.
in a previous episode, Scott.
Yeah. It's kind of the self-reliant, you know, I can do it on my own kind of thing. And if I reach out to the government, maybe that shows I'm weak or whatever the case may be. But those programs are in place for a reason.
They are in place for a reason, and not enough people take advantage of them, particularly in rural parts of the state. And if someone's got a great business idea, they can find capital, they can find what they need. Great, more power to them. We just want them to succeed. But most people do need a little bit of help. And whether it's identifying the right market, being able to get to that market, whatever it is. And so that's where we want to step in and be able to help out.
And you are a part of a lot of boards as well. So you're on the board for the Inland Port. And we had a couple months ago an episode about that with Senator Buxton. But I want people to know that are listening right here, because they haven't listened to that. Why is the port important to the state's growth?
Well, what we've got in the state of Utah is real opportunity that most states don't have. And with a little bit of planning, we can turn some of these ideas and concepts into something that's really meaningful for the future. And so as we think about the Point of the Mountain, as we think about the Inland Port, as we think about some of these other areas, if we're really strategic about what we do, these can turn into significant economic engines for the future. And so we think about, you know, really designing Point of the Mountain in the right way. The Inland Port is a very interesting concept in and of itself. And right now, the idea is basically you really want to double down on logistics, making sure that we're providing logistics the way that we can to help with export promotion, other types of logistical needs. But the opportunity there is, as we look at some of our manufacturers, they need that. And if we can create better logistics here in the state of Utah, then we're going to have a chance to create better manufacturing, better life science, better, you know, tech, whatever it is. We're hoping that this Inland Port really serves as a catalyst to help these industries grow.
Now, when you say Inland Port, and it almost is an oxymoron. You know, when you say inland port, that sounds like, what is that?
Yeah.
So from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, by inland port, they really mean they turn a station or an inland port here in Utah as if it was a port. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think the concept is, you know, how do you create, you know, we talk about and we hear about all these log jams on the port, you know, a whole lot of ships that are just waiting to come into sea. If you can create efficiencies in terms of getting them through customs, customs is a really big one. International customs can be really difficult. And if you think about that, if you take an international flight and you get off and you have to go through customs, it's a pain. You know, sometimes you get caught in a 2-hour line at LAX or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's the same concept. If you can go through customs here in the state of Utah, as opposed to being at the at a port, ultimately you're going to create better efficiencies. Mm-hmm. Well, creating that volume from port, even though we're inland, we're not at the sea, if we can create that volume coming to the state of Utah, ultimately we're creating a better logistical environment for people to get their goods out and back out of the United States as well, exporting. And so the idea really is, can we do some of the features that a coastal port would do, but do them inland so that they can get through the process at the port on the coast much more quickly. And so I think that's part of it. But the other thing that we talk about is the inland port is also a 14,000 acre area as well. And so the northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City is a very, very strategic area. It's around the airport. It's where several highways come together. And so logistically, it's a very important path even for the United States, Western United States. And so if we can be strategic about that, we've already got some really good manufacturers. You know, we've got Albany, we've got L3, Northrop Grumman's in that area as well. And so if we can, again, be strategic, there's an opportunity there to really create a lot of employment base that I think could help the state.
Has there been an inland port somewhere else in the United States is successful?
Yes. In fact, there's several right now. There's one in Chicago, but there's also one in, I think it's Greer, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is they've got a relationship with their coastal port. It's inland, but it allows them, and they've got a large auto manufacturer, I think it's BMW, that's right by their port that does a lot of exporting as well. So they build, and then they're just able to go through customs, ship to the port, coastal port, and get out much more smoothly. And so that concept, I think the idea of an inland port is foreign to a lot of people in the state because they hear it. They don't know what it means.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of negative press, unfortunately. And so that probably has not helped to clear things up. The concept there, again, is just very simple. How do we do some things that the coastal port does here locally to get people out more quickly to an international market?
Do you see that as a positive?
Yeah, I do think it's a positive. I think it's got to be done the right way. And I talk with Jack and Hedge, the executive director of the Inland Port, very frequently. One of my concerns with a logistical area, port area, is that you not turn the entire area into the west side of Chicago or the Long Beach port. I mean, we're the best economy on the planet. We've got to make sure that we stay that way. We really need things that create that economic multiplier, like advanced manufacturing, like defense, like life sciences, commercial aerospace. And so if all we are is just a main distribution hub, we haven't done anything to help the economy. We really haven't. I mean, those jobs, and if we get a billion square feet of distribution space because of the inland port, we probably failed, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we can't create really meaningful economic inertia for the west side of Salt Lake City and really create something there that's meaningful, I think we've probably failed. So I do think that's something that we've got to bear in mind.
When is the decision going to be made on that?
Well, so the idea of the actual inland port itself, and I do have to disclaim just quickly. So with the governor's recent, very recent signature of a piece of legislation, it actually slimmed the board down. So now there's just going to be 5 members. I'm actually going to be taking a step off of the board. I'll still be helping out with the port. But Dan Hemmert, our executive director, is actually going to be the new, one of the governor's new representatives on the port. But the idea of an actual inland port itself, like I don't think we'll ever see in the near term an inland port actually built. And I think we're all kind of on the same page there. And so I think what they're talking about more and more is how do we create like the customs capabilities? How do we create more transmodal facilities and create those logistics? But an actual port itself is really, really expensive. So I think we'll probably be doing more scaled back logistics in an effort to maybe see if we can build up what our volume is. And so we'll see what the...
Kind of like dipping our toe in the water.
You got it.
So to speak.
Yeah. But getting more of the coastal ports to recognize who we are and being willing to ship, you know, cargo through here is even important, because then we get better rates going back to the coast for our people that want to ship.
Another board, though, that we want to ask you about, the Commission on Housing Affordability.
Yes.
That was what I was going to
say. So are you guys concerned about the impact that like interest rates have on the market right now, or what's going on there?
All the above. Everything to do with housing is a concern right now. And so the cost of housing, inflation, where you can build housing, the types of housing that are being built, housing availability, all the way down to deeply affordable housing for those who are very low income or those who are homeless, and transitional housing. So I think everything to do with housing right now is probably one of those concerns. The commission will be pivoting a little bit this year towards more focused on solutions. And so one of the things that we've been focused on is more density in areas where it makes sense, particularly around like front runner stations, places where maybe the community won't come out in total opposition to a housing project.
Yeah.
But that's one of the biggest problems right now is, I mean, there's more density that you could do in terms of types of housing, but a lot of communities, when that happens, they come out with pitchforks and they don't want it. And so, but that's us. Yeah. Like the question is, would any of us be okay with a multifamily housing complex next door to our house? We've got to get more used to the idea of density. And I think a lot of us think, well, you know, what type of element is that going to bring into my neighborhood or what have you? The reality is it's our kids and grandkids that are trying to find places to live. And so I think the Commission on Housing Affordability really has its hands full this year. But I think there's a number of topics that we're looking at that I think will be really intriguing. So hopefully we can start to get ahead of that. But the other issue is just building housing right now. You know, we hear of like 30,000, you know, permitted units in Eagle Mountain or Saratoga Springs. They just can't build them fast enough. And so construction work, and there's just bottlenecks all along the line in the housing conversation. So hopefully the market will cool down a little bit. We'll see. But right now it's a major issue. Yes, definitely facing
you. Those meetings, are you guys just sitting there like, where do we even start?
Well, you've got some really smart people on the committee. I think what the committee is going to be doing over the next year is starting to segment the issues. So transitional and a deeply affordable housing will have kind of more of its own focus. Affordable housing will have its own focus, and housing in general will have its own focus. And so instead of trying to solve all of them in, you know, one meeting, it's how do you segment it out? How do you get more focused on those topics and bring more solutions to bear?
Is there anything that you wish that more Utahns knew about?
I think the thing that I wish more Utahns and really understood is just how important, I was going to say dire, but I'm not, how important the growth conversation actually is. And I think when we take a step back, a lot of us really enjoy the quality of life that we experience here in Utah. For those of us who've been to other places where it's high growth, you know that that quality of life declines really quickly when you've got to spend 2 hours on the freeway trying to get to work. You can't water your lawn. You can't afford a home. The situation around growth is really important. And it's not just the idea is, we'll just keep pushing it to the fringes. That's not the answer. We've got to grow smarter than what we are. We've got to have the right kinds of growth. And so I think as we get more regional and communities work together, that may mean that, you know, we're more creative, flexible. We work together in terms of finding transportation and housing and water situations. But it's better to be a little uncomfortable now in finding those solutions than to be really uncomfortable 10 and 20 years from now. And that's what I hope every Utahn understands, is if we can make some sacrifices now and get things right, it's going to make things easier in the long run. If we don't, it's going to make life miserable in the long run. And we are going to turn into California. We're going to have that air quality year round. We're going to have water issues. We're going to all of these things that we're talking about. So for me, that is probably the most important thing to understand.
So don't procrastinate.
Yes, don't procrastinate.
Don't kick it down the can down the road, which is done a lot of times. That's why a lot of states are where they're at.
Yeah.
Because they've been kicking these cans down the road for decades, and eventually you can't kick it any further.
Yeah.
I'm glad to know that the governor's office realizes that you got to tackle these issues before they become dire circumstances. Yeah.
And don't come out with pitchforks. Come out with an understanding, at least a willingness to try and understand what a solution could be. Leave the pitchforks at home.
That's the best advice I've ever
heard. Right?
At home.
Exactly.
Well, I think you mentioned at the beginning that we were like number one in yeah. in the world.
Yeah. I mean, we have the lowest unemployment rate in the country right now. We've got one of the highest growth rates in the country right now. So as you compare us state to state, we really are, if not the best economy, one of the best, but I think we're probably the best right now. But there's some good competition. But then you look globally, and we used to look, you know, at some of the Asian economies. We used to look at some of the European economies. And I right now, pound for pound, I would stack up the state of Utah and our economy against anywhere else in the world. Because I think when you look at the foundation, I think you look at a good workforce that's coming through the talent pipeline. You look at good infrastructure, good leadership in the state. I would put our economy against anyone else in the world right now.
That's hey, cool.
If there's nothing else you take away from this, because, you know, there are some, you know, chicken littles all the time. They're, you know, the sky is falling kind of thing. The sky might be falling in Montana, but here, but here in Utah, it's raining dollars and cents.
Well said. Yep.
Well, and I had heard somewhere just that Utah does a good job of budgeting.
Their fiscal responsibility is.
Yeah. So the state of Utah is generally, almost year after year, recognized as the most well-managed state fiscally across the board. And so we do a great job keeping our fiscal house in order. But also, we just got this award again last week, 15th year in a row, we were named the state with the best economic outlook.
Whoa.
And so for us, I mean, we've been number one on the Forbes list. We've been number one on a lot of lists. But I think for us, just to make sure that we're looking to the future. And again, so having the best economic outlook is a great place to be.
Wait, we're number one on like the Forbes list?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm going to do right now? Nobody can see this, but I will act like I'm standing up. Standing ovation for the governor's office on economics, because that's saying something. And that's something that Utahns should be really proud of, that we're number one. We're number one in a lot of things. But this is the most important thing for the health of any family.
It is. And it's the hive mentality. It absolutely is. It is every bee. It's everyone doing their own part. And, you know, we've got the lowest poverty rate to go along with some of our, we've got one of, I think it's the lowest, but if not the one of the lowest, we have a very, very productive and efficient state. Like everyone wants to, you know, put in an honest 8 hours mm-hmm. work, you know, whatever it may be, usually more than that nowadays. But I think everyone being willing to pitch in, businesses being willing to invest, I mean, employers that are making good choices, hopefully a government making a good choice. It really is that hive mentality of everyone pitching in. You don't get to be where we are unless everyone's kind of pulling in the same direction. So we're fortunate.
Just a plug for all you homeowners out there. Remember, you get to choose your title company.
And here at Title One, there's a reason why there's a one in our title. Learn all about our colossal closings
by going to askusutah.com.
We celebrate with you in securing a house for your home.